Thank you, Shelley. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. As Henry VIII said to his third wife, I'm not going to keep you very long. But I'd like to leave you with one fact. This year, Ford Motor Company celebrated the 112th anniversary of its birth, which happens to be a multiple of the life expectancy of the average Fortune 500 company. In fact, most experts estimate that now stands at 20 to 30 years. And in thinking about the company's longevity, it occurred to me we wouldn't have survived for this period without two things. One is the Ford family's focus on the future, and the second is their commitment to attract the top talent in the United States and the rest of the world to the automotive business. Now, I'd like to give you just a couple of examples. In 2006, when Ford was losing billions of dollars, William Clay Ford Jr. concluded he needed outside help, so he went to Boeing. And he convinced Alan Mulally to replace him as CEO. And about 3 months later, the two of them went to Wall Street, and they literally bet the farm. They pledged all the assets, the plant, the property, the equipment, even the Ford name, so they could borrow $23.4 billion, without which we probably would have been forced into bankruptcy. But the more important point is none of this would have happened without the strong belief on the part of the family in the future of the company. When it comes to talent, today's speaker, Mark Fields, who's the CEO of Ford, is an excellent example. Now, I'm not going to summarize his resume other than point out that from the early days, he was on a fast track. 15 years ago, he became the CEO of the Mazda Corporation in Japan. At the time, he was the youngest head of a large Japanese company. Now, he also has, in addition to a superb endowment of gray matter, he's got a couple of other traits that quickly enabled him to become Alan Mulally's right-hand man. They are the courage to foresee and anticipate and recognize problems. And equally important, the ability to galvanize the troops to fix them. Now, when Alan Mulally first started at Ford, he was concerned about these traits, which are very important in the product development process, because if either one of them is missing, the likelihood of quality problems down the roads increases markedly. Mulally was bothered by the fact that several Ford executives weren't willing to stand up and raise key problems at a time when the company was losing billions of dollars. Now, all this changed with Mark Fields when he stood up in front of a group of executives and acknowledged that we would have to delay Ford's new SUV, the Edge. Alan Mulally immediately started clapping, and so did the rest of the executives, and what might have been otherwise a problem disappeared. In fact, Mulally says that this was the leading factor in Ford Motor Company's turnaround, at least in the culture. And so without further ado, I'd like to have you join me in welcoming Mark Fields. Mark?
Well, good afternoon, everybody. All right. First off, I want to thank you, Ned, for inviting me to come and speak to this terrific group today. And sorry I was a little late coming in, but I came in just in time, and Ned is a lot more relaxed now that I was able to come on time. But it really is great to see a lot of great Ford alumni and Ford executives. And I have either worked for or with a number of the Ford alumni, and I have to tell you, we stand on your shoulders. We would not be here today without the work and the leadership that all of you provided over the course of your careers that we could build upon. So for that, I speak for the other 197,000 employees around the world, and thank you for your service at Ford. And I learned a lot from a lot of these guys over the course of my career. And I'm very, very grateful for what you've done. Now let's talk about, I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about Ford, but also where we are as an industry and where we think that we're heading. And I really believe this is one of the most exciting times to be part of the global automotive industry. And of course, one of the most exciting times to be at Ford. Because if you look at our company, we're a growth company in a growth industry around the world. And if you look at the automotive industry itself, in the next 5 years, by the end of this decade, the industry is going to grow by over $1 trillion. That's a lot of growth. And the industry also, it's very rapidly evolving. The clock speed of change is going faster and faster. There's new enabling technologies that are driving innovation faster than ever. And there's new, obviously, there's existing traditional competitors, and there's these new non-traditional competitors that we never thought would even be interested in the automotive business. And the world is basically changing around us. I mean, you know, the people are interacting in new ways. They share information differently these days, particularly using technology. And they consume products and services in more ways than we've ever seen before, and on multiple different kind of platforms that they do that. And you really have a new generation of customers that are out there that use technology to make their lives easier. And as we stand back and we look at our company, at Ford, we're becoming obviously both an automotive company, but also thinking of ourselves as a mobility company. And why a mobility company? Well, it's more than just about motion. It's more than just about getting from point A to point B. And it's really about human progress, and it goes back to our founder, Henry Ford. Because Henry Ford's affordable car put the world on wheels at the time and made physical movement accessible to everyone. It was the first time folks could go outside of 3 miles of where they lived, and it was extremely liberating for the country. And he gave people the opportunity to pursue new experiences and also expand their economic opportunities. So for us, mobility, how would we define mobility? Very simply, mobility is the freedom for people to live, work, and play where they want. And it's freedom of mobility that actually helps make people's lives better for millions of people around the world. And that was Henry Ford's original vision, and it's still alive and well in the company today. And today, our vision continues to make people's lives better and change the way the world moves. And today in the company, we're focused on three priorities. The first one is accelerating the pace of progress of what we call our One Ford Plan, which is our strategy to grow our business. Delivering product excellence with passion, and driving innovation into every part of our business. And I would describe it as having our strategy of having one foot in today, which means delivering this month's sales and delivering this quarter's financials and delivering this year's objectives. And then having one foot in the future, which is really about understanding what do we think the world will look like. And as we do that, as we have one foot in today and one foot in tomorrow, we're going to continue to focus on two areas of our business. And the first area is our core business. Now, what is our core business? Our core business is designing, developing, manufacturing, and marketing terrific cars, utilities, and trucks, financing them through Ford Credit, which is our credit arm, and being able to service our customers. And we made a lot of progress in our core business, and we love our core business, and we're never going to forget that core business. And we've made a lot of progress. For example, Ned was saying the past 5 years has really marked one of the most consistently profitable periods in our history. In the last quarter, third quarter, we had record profits. The team delivered record profits. And we've positioned this year, 2015, as a breakthrough year for us, both in terms of growing our volumes, growing our revenue, and improving our profits on a year-over-year basis and our margins, and we're well on our way to doing that. We're also well on our way to having the sixth consecutive year where we are the best-selling brand here in the U.S., and we've grown our global market share for the third quarter in a row. And to date, we get about 7.5% of the global industry around the world. So it gets back to us being a growth company in a growth industry. But we're also proud of the external recognition that we're given, and we never take that for granted. We were named for the sixth year in a row one of the world's most ethical companies. And these days, what you read in the paper, you know how important that is. Because just as many years as it takes to build up that reputation, it could be gone in a nanosecond. And we never forget that. We've been named one of the most, the top 100 in-demand employers in North America by LinkedIn. And we've also, Interbrand, which is a brand consultancy, very well known, we've been named as one of Interbrand's best global brands. So as I step back, we're doing well in our core business, but we never take it for granted. And we're going to love it, we're going to invest in it, and we're going to continue to grow it. But we're just as aggressive in pursuing what we call emerging opportunities, or what we term Ford Smart Mobility. And to define it, Ford Smart Mobility is our plan using innovation to take us to the next level in terms of mobility, in terms of connectivity as cars become part of the Internet of Things. Mobility, ride sharing, car sharing, those type of things. Autonomous vehicles, vehicles that can drive themselves in various different fashions. Data and analytics. And then how technology is actually changing not only the customer experience when you buy a vehicle, but how you own a vehicle over time. And so we're taking a very holistic approach to those emerging opportunities. And as a business, it's very important, getting back to something I mentioned a little earlier, to have a point of view of what the world will look like 10 or even 15 years from now. Because then as a company, you have to make choices. Strategy is about making choices. And making those choices and rewinding back to today and saying, what are the things that we need to do now to position ourselves for success 5, 10, and 15 years down the road? And a great way of doing that is looking at societal changes. And we're looking at a number of different societal changes that we think are going to change the world and actually change mobility in a lot of different ways. And the first one is urbanization. Today in the world, there are 28 what they call megacities, which are these are cities with 10 million or more residents or populations. And by 2030, so 15 years from now, by various studies, that's going to grow to over 41. So what does that mean? More congestion in cities, more traffic, et cetera. And the existing infrastructure, as you see in a number of cities, just simply can't sustain that level of growth. I mean, for those of you that have been, you know, to New York, even the last week or two, to get cross town, you know, as I'm a New Yorker, as they say, forget about it. You know, it is tough. But the roadmap has to include not only smarter cars, but also smarter roads and smarter cities. Now, the second megatrend is the growth of the global middle class. Today, around the world, there's about 2 billion people in the middle class. And by various studies, in the next 15 years, that's going to grow to 4 billion people. And a lot of that growth is going to be in the emerging markets, the Chinas, the Indias, the Indonesias of the world. And of course, what's the first thing you do when you get into the middle class? To connote that you've gotten into the middle class. You want to buy a car. So of course, that is going to increase and provide even more challenges from a congestion standpoint. Now the third mega trend is the issues of air quality. And air quality not only from an environmental standpoint, but it's also a basic health standpoint. because there are very serious social and public health issues around bad air. I don't know if you had a chance over the last couple of days to see in let's use Beijing, for example. 2 days ago in Beijing, they had the highest ever recorded pollution level. If you saw some of the pictures, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And imagine having to remind your kids to never go outside to play without their face masks on. And that's what they do in certain portions of the world. Or imagine having to go grocery shopping for your parents who live 30 miles away because the elderly have been advised to stay indoors. It's a bad air day. So that's a very important trend. The fourth mega trend is just changing consumer attitudes and priorities. So the millennials, right? Young folks that are born in the early 80s through the early 2000s. Listen, they're delaying marriage. They're delaying buying homes. They're delaying having children. Some of them may still be living in your basements. But, you know, they're doing things differently. And their idea of mobility is different. In many cases, for young people, particularly in urban areas, it's not about ownership. It's about access to mobility, not necessarily having to own a vehicle. So, you know, and I'll just give you an example on how, you know, and you probably have many examples yourself. I was in New York a couple of days ago, and I was meeting with a couple of young folks who are coming in from Austin. So I was asking them how they planned their trip, et cetera. They said, we didn't plan it at all. We got up this morning, we got on our smartphone, we made the plane reservation, went right down to the airport. You know, I had my boarding pass on the phone, came over here. I said, what are you going to do for a hotel? He goes, well, I got my Hotel Tonight app, you know, and I'll figure it out, and then, you know, at the end of the meeting. This is the way they live their lives, and they use technology to help make their lives easier. So rather than sitting back and worrying about these trends, from our standpoint, we're going to do something about them. And that's where our whole strategy around Ford Smart Mobility comes in. And a critical first step for us is experimentation, because that's where you can learn. And we kicked off more than 25 global experiments at the beginning of this year around the world, in January. And all were really designed to help us learn about what future transportation may look like in different parts of the world. And our goal is pretty simple. It's to create affordable and accessible solutions to some of the world's greatest mobility challenges and transportation challenges that are out there. And these experiments range in a lot of different ways, from technologies that locate open parking spaces in crowded cities to allowing us to actually move vehicles across cities with remote control. And, you know, that kind of freaks people out when you see, you know, the car driving around with nobody behind it. Using vehicles and actually bikes together to gather information about traffic and parking conditions in various parts of the cities. And also experiments to even make healthcare more accessible, and in particularly in rural areas in different parts of the world. So we've learned a lot, kind of loads of learning on that. And we made significant progress in the first half of the year on those experiments. And we've developed a clear roadmap ahead for us. And in June, we moved to kind of the next chapter based on those learnings for our Ford Smart Mobility plan. And we're going to focus on two areas. And the first area is flexible use and ownership. And this very simply is it explores car sharing, ride sharing, carpooling, and other forms of joint ownership in addition to traditional forms of ownership of vehicles, but also what we call multimodal urban mobility solutions. Say that five times fast. It's a mouthful, but it's really at looking at ways of to integrate cars, bikes, and trains that will allow people to get access into and out of a city and get there in a very efficient manner. And we're learning a lot, and our learnings from these projects will basically drive our future decisions as a company. And also, very importantly, enable us to getting back to making sure we deliver affordable mobility for people around the world. Not just for rich folks, but for everyone. Because that's what our company was founded on, accessibility and democratization of technology and mobility. And our goal is to make connectivity, mobility, autonomous vehicles accessible to everyone, just as Henry Ford made the automobile accessible to people around the world over 100 years ago. And, you know, what I'd like to do is just give you a little brief update and some examples of how we're making progress in each element of what we call Ford Smart Mobility. So let's start with connectivity. You know, these days, particularly young people, but probably many of you, including myself, you know, we have to stay connected. You know, when I forget this at home, if I'm 10 miles away, I'm going to drive back home because I start shaking, right? Because I'm not connected anymore. And we're all trying to think, gosh, remember the days when we weren't, when we actually be left alone? So when you look at that, Sync, which we developed back in 2007, is the most popular communications and entertainment system in the industry. And it allows you, when you get into a Ford vehicle, to access your smartphone without using controls. You can use voice activation, et cetera. And essentially what it does, it helps you keep your eyes on the road and hands on the wheel, which is really important for all the things that you're hearing about distracted driving. And it allows you to voice activate making a call, sending a text, controlling your music features, you name it. And now we've introduced the latest, we're on actually version 3 of Sync. It's faster, it's more intuitive, and it's simpler to use from what we learned from customer feedback. And a few weeks ago, we introduced what we call Sync Connect, which is it's new technology that's enabling drivers to easily access their vehicles via their smartphone, start their car remotely. You know, I know it doesn't apply down here, but for those of you that lived up north on a cold, snowy morning, you could start your car, and by the time you get in it, you know, it's comfortable, it's ready to go. Or here, for those of you that are here in August, you know, start your car up about an hour before you get out of your house, and it'll be cool. But, so it's basically using an app on your smartphone, and again, this new technology, you can lock your car. You can actually schedule on a regular basis what time you want your car started. You can check on your fuel wherever you are, and you can find where your car is if you parked it and can't remember, and it will tell you that. When we interviewed customers, they would never admit that they wanted that feature, but they really did. So in the future, this platform, this Sync platform, is going to serve to further expand our ability to provide what we call over-the-air software updates to vehicles, to update your vehicle on a regular basis, the infotainment system, the engine, or other driver assist technology. So in some cases, you won't have to go back to the dealer. And the dealers are still going to remain a very important part of our business. But again, technology that's making people's lives better. So that's connectivity. On autonomous vehicles, lots of talk about autonomous vehicles. And there's different levels of autonomous vehicles. The engineering community has 5 different levels. And, you know, the ultimate level is, you know, you wake up, you take a shower, you get dressed, you go down into your garage, you hit the button, you go to sleep, and you wake up at grandma's house. Now, that's a long way away. A long way away, but there's other levels of autonomous vehicles, particularly vehicles that can drive themselves in what we call pre-mapped areas with 3D maps that will be available for us. And from our standpoint, we're very dedicated to this because we're already manufacturing and selling semi-autonomous features in our vehicles, features that will keep you in your lane, features that, you know, like adaptive cruise control that will sense when a car is in front of you, features that will we call cross-traffic alert, where if you're parking out of the Publix and somebody's coming by, the vehicle will notify you. So we sell a lot of vehicles with these semi-autonomous features, which are the building blocks for full autonomy. But we also have full autonomous vehicles on the road today, and we're testing them. And we've actually been testing them for about 10 years now. And a few weeks ago, we announced that we were the first OEM utilizing a facility as part of the University of Michigan. It's called M-City. It is a simulated urban area. And so we can test going through red lights and stop signs and things of that nature, which are really giving us practical, real-world mileage that we can use to make further developments in the development of our autonomous vehicles. And our view is that with the right combination of environment, but also the regulatory environment, fully autonomous vehicles will be probably on the marketplace within the next 4 years, by the end of the decade. And to be clear, our priority at Ford is not necessarily to be the first. And the reason for that is our priority is making sure that the first Ford autonomous vehicles are accessible to everyone, and not just a certain income level. Now, on the customer experience, we're also developing new solutions to make customers' lives easier, because we want to make it simpler for them. These days, it's about time is precious. They want their lives simpler. And it starts with the ownership and the financing of our vehicles, and we're experimenting with some really interesting options to provide even more personalized solutions. We have an experiment going on, or a pilot going on now, on peer-to-peer car sharing, which is a great example. We just completed this pilot in London, and it allows our Ford Credit customers to actually loan out their vehicles to other pre-registered users to use their vehicle, and they can use that to help defray the costs of their monthly payment. So pay-by-mile type of, also we're experimenting with pay-by-mile type of approaches. So really trying to push the envelope on that. And we're using these experiments to learn. And not every experiment is going to succeed. But that's okay, because you want to learn from each one. And our vision, very simply, is to move from not just a transaction-based relationship in terms of when you buy the vehicle, but also to a long-term ownership experience. And that's going to be enabled with the level of communication that we can have with our customers. And finally, that's where big data and analytics, one of the other areas of Ford Smart Mobility, kind of plays in. It plays an important role in all elements of Ford Smart Mobility. And we want to be viewed as trusted stewards of that data, right? Because these days, all you're hearing about is, right, hacking and, Home Depot and Target and, what's going to happen with cars when cars become connected. We want to be viewed as trusted sources of that data. And we also want to make sure we ask permission to use that data from customers. Because there are some customers, we talk about the connected car, and a lot of people want to have a connected car. There's a lot of people that don't want to have a connected car for a variety of different reasons. So we have to ask permission to gather that data. But also, it's got to be a what's in it for the owner. Right? What kind of services or features are they getting for the use of that? And so all of our mobility pilots and experiments are really giving us direct insight into how customers are changing, how they move around, which is playing, again, another key role in the development of new and more personalized mobility products and solutions for drivers as we go forward. So in total, as we step back, the world's changing, which is very energizing. Consumers are shifting priorities, and technology is moving faster than ever before. The clock speed on technology is absolutely incredible. And we see this as an opportunity. And we see it as just as big an opportunity as Henry Ford did when he put the world on wheels over 100 years ago. And we understand very clearly that the winners are going to be the innovators and the disruptors and those that are willing to break with tradition. And it's important as we think about that. So we asked ourselves the question, how are we going to disrupt ourselves in our industry so we don't let others do it for us, folks that are outside our industry? And that's why we're encouraging a mindset and all of our employees to adopt an innovation mindset. And what is an innovation mindset? Well, for us, it's six things, six questions to ask. First question, challenge custom and question tradition. Ned said, we're 112 years old as a company. We are extremely proud of that. And all of us love serving in a company with that kind of history. But we also know
112 years, you know, you develop some habits and views of the world. But just asking yourself the question, you know, are we challenging custom and questioning tradition? Secondly, take nothing for granted. Right? When you're doing something for a long time, you take a lot of things for granted. So just asking the question kind of opens up a whole, you know, strain of thought that you may otherwise would not have if you didn't ask the question. Using technology when you can. Always focusing on the consumer experience. In other words, how do we get our engineers and marketers in our company thinking about experiences that we want to deliver to our customers? And then thinking about what's the technology and the hardware and the software to deliver that? As opposed to the other way around, which is, oh, we got all these cool technologies and we got this great, well, let's put it all together and we'll create an experience for a customer. It's a very different way to think about, but it's thinking about it truly through the customer's eyes. Next is moving fast and experimenting. And lastly is taking appropriate risks. Not reckless risks, but taking appropriate risks and celebrating the wins, but also at the same time celebrating the things that don't work out and asking our questions, what did we learn from that? So for us as a senior leadership team, innovation is in our blood as a company, right? It goes back to Henry Ford, the moving assembly line, the $5 a day wage, which created the global middle class, the flathead V8, the first affordable V8 engine. Even fast forwarding to the recent past, our Sync system, our EcoBoost engines, our new F-150, which is an all-aluminum vehicle, which really is, we took a revolutionary approach to full-size pickups and is doing extremely well in the marketplace. We know how to innovate. This is not something we have to give all our employees a half a day, 50 PowerPoint slide presentation on how to innovate. Our job as a senior team is allow them to do it. It's allow them to do it. And it's sending the message, it's not just the big and the complex things. It's the small and the simple things. Everybody can help make the company better. Everybody can innovate. And innovation, very simply from our standpoint, is people coming together and creating value by implementing new ideas that allow us to satisfy the customer better, allow us to save costs, become more efficient, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we're challenging ourselves as a 112-year-old company to think, act, and disrupt like a startup. You know, at the end of the day, it's really exciting to see this take hold inside the company. But it's mandatory, it is absolutely essential for our future, given our traditional competitors and all those non-traditional competitors that are looking at our business and looking at the automotive market and saying, gee, I'd like my piece of that because it's a pretty big market. So this is how we're thinking about the future. We're becoming both an automotive company and a mobility company, and we're going to continue to invest and love the core business, but also invest and love these emerging opportunities at the same time. And I think as we capitalize on these things and the holistic approach we're taking is a little bit different than a number of our competitors, and always bringing us back to that mission of making people's lives better and doing it through innovation. And I'll just end before we open up for question with I love the quotes from Henry Ford. And he had one that he taught us a long time ago. And he said, a good business makes excellent products and earns a healthy return. But a great business does all that while creating a better world. And that's what drives us today at Ford. So thank you very much.
A little gift for you. That was awesome. We appreciate it. We have a couple gifts for you. There is a table booked for Naples and for Marco Island.
Right.
So you can remember us when you head back to the cold country. Ned, you've got a few questions I can see.
I won't need the gavel. I want to thank you all. I think I have a total of 50 questions. Probably the majority, or the largest number of questions, deal with self-driving cars. And there are a couple of issues with that. As people go into self-driving cars, Will that reduce car sales? That's sort of one. Two, how do you protect against hackers as the car becomes increasingly computer driven? And, you know, you want to have cars where people can't hack in and have the braking system go awry. And will car sales continue to grow, as you outlined, especially in areas of urban gridlock?
Mm-hmm. Great set of questions. Wow, you sound like a bunch of reporters. So let's take the first one. What's going to happen with the overall size of the auto industry? Because the auto industry plays, in any part of the world, plays a really important part of the economic fundamentals of the country. And when you look at it, first off, the simple answer is it's too early to tell. There's lots of opinions out there. You have analysts out there that says, with the advent of autonomous vehicles, it's going to cut the industry by 50%. To others that say, well, maybe not so much. But when you think about the urban areas, will there be less cars in urban areas, major urban areas? Yes, I strongly believe there will be. I mean, it's being mandated right now. You go to London, there's a congestion charge, right? City of Oslo, in 2019, they just passed an ordinance. They want to outlaw the use of all private cars in downtown Oslo. So it's coming, but, so that's on the downside in terms of reducing the industry. On the upside, if you do have a lot of autonomous vehicles, guess what? They're going to be racking up mileage a lot quicker than a privately owned vehicle. So that also can help compensate for that. So there's a variety of different factors, and I'm always asked the question around, you know, is the world just, are we going to wake up 50 years from now and it's just going to be a bunch of mindless, roving, autonomous vehicles running around, and you call it up on your smartphone at any time. During our lifetimes, there will still be a majority of vehicles that will be shopped, purchased, owned, and driven the way it's been for many decades. I mean, think about the mom or the dad that has two kids and two car seats. Are they going to want to schlep two car seats, right, from shared vehicle to shared vehicle? I mean, I don't know about you, but when my kids were growing up, I used my vehicle as a roving cargo storage place for all their stuff. So it's still too early to tell. Secondly, on the car hacking, is a very important issue because there's been some media reports around cars that have been hacked with people that have actually access to the car because you can plug into what we call the OBD port and get into the system. But that's not so much of an issue if the car is secure. It's the over-the-air hacking. And there was an instance with, a Jeep a number of months ago. That's why we're working so hard on what are going to be the fail-safe and the what I call the garden walls around certain things. The electrical system of the car. When you want to go over the air to update it, we may want to just leave that to just kind of infotainment type of options. But when it comes to brakes, steering, those type of things, we're thinking about very clearly these what we call mission critical systems, walling them off. But we're very clear that there are a lot of, one of the security firms told me, they had a great saying, there's a lot more bad guys out there than good guys. So we have to be very vigilant around that, and we'll continue to do that.
I got a great question from one of the students. It says, to what do you feel you owe your success to at such a young age?
Yeah, I'm not young anymore. I just want to be really... I've been fortunate. The main thing is I've worked for a company that provides opportunities for everybody. You know, I'm a little biased. I get it. But Ford Motor Company is one of the most egalitarian and ethical companies in the world. And if you want to have a great career at Ford, you can, no matter what strata of the population you come from, et cetera. And I think the biggest thing my success is first the teams that I've worked with. We have great people at Ford. And the second is just the opportunities that the company has given me to go and do different things. And you know, one of the advice I give our young people when they join the company is one of the two pieces of advice I give them are, first, and it was funny, one of the schools has this in their credo, have the end in mind. So whenever I would go into either a department or run a business, etc., I would think 3-4 years out, where did I want that
department or that business to be, work with my team to develop a plan and rewind back to today. Because the car business is very complex, and there's going to be good days, you make two steps forward, and there's going to be bad days where you're going to want to go home and put your head through the wall. But as long as you have that end in mind, it'll keep your sanity. The other piece of advice I give is run to the fire. And what I mean by that is I've always had the opportunity to go to, in my career at Ford, run to very difficult business situations. A lot of times situations that others didn't want to go to. So I had the opportunity, I thought, to grow professionally, but also to contribute to the company. So those are the two things.
Great answer. There are several new entrants, potential entrants into the automotive industry, including Google, Apple, and Tesla. Do you foresee their entry will lead to further consolidations within the industry?
Well, it's a really interesting question. First off, obviously Tesla is in the business, and they've done a very good job in raising the awareness of electrified vehicles, and they've done some very innovative things. And I think it's forcing the industry to do a number of different things. Now, keep in mind also at the same time, they've never made any money. And as a car business, and as business people, you know at some point you got to generate positive cash flow and earn a return because, you know, you got to pay the bills. But in the case of Apple, who knows what they're going to do? Our working assumption should be they're going to do a car, it's going to have a great user interface, and it's probably going to look good, and it's going to be connected. And Google, you know, they're doing their autonomous testing. But in terms of the implications that it has on the rest of the industry, scale is very important in this business. But I think at Ford, we've learned that just going for a big number on scale, and then ultimately how do you execute that, particularly if you try and bring two companies together with different cultures and different ways of doing things, and the way the business is moving so fast right now, I mean, our industry is littered with supposed tie-ups that didn't work. So there's the hardware piece of it, which is how do you put it all together, and then there's the software piece of it, of how you work it. So will it lead to some? I don't know. But our approach at Ford is to, will we see opportunities on a project-by-project basis to work with others? We'll do that, and we do that today. But in terms of going out and, you know, buying somebody or, you know, merging or whatever, that's our first order of business is merging with ourselves.
I've got a couple of questions on the relationship with the UAW. The contract that you recently negotiated, within the rank and file, I think the approval rate was just above 50%.
50.4%, just
50.4%. Well, you got to give me a little credit. I just rounded that baby. But in any event, do you think dissatisfaction with wages is a major issue? And will a new contract make you less competitive with the foreign manufacturers, or will lower fuel prices help you offset that?
Well, great set of questions. And obviously, we just concluded the UAW contract. And I think whenever I talk to people and I tell them I work for Ford and whatever, and they say, oh, you have to work with the UAW. That must be awful. And I tell them, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We went through our downturn, and we had to say goodbye to almost 50% of our workforce and close a number of plants. As we did that, we never lost one unit of production, and our quality actually went up. And so we talk with our UAW colleagues daily, not just when we have contracts. So this contract, our objective was to make sure we had a fair contract for our workers because we want our workers paid well, but also at the same time keep us competitive. And, you know, it was, you know, these votes are always, they're always close affairs. Yeah, this one was a little closer. But when you look at it, it came down to the last day. It was a little closer, but we were calm. But when you think about it, this contract, it very importantly, it does a number of different things. First off, versus our domestic competitors, it significantly closes the wage gap difference that we had. And the reason for that is because two of our main competitors who went bankrupt had some things in the previous contract that advantaged them. We decided not to go bankrupt. We decided to do it on our own, pull ourselves up from our bootstraps, and do it the old-fashioned way. But so this contract actually eliminates that. We still have a gap versus what's known as the transplants. It's about an $8 or $9 gap. And what this contract, and we have that forces us to make sure we continue to work, look at areas for productivity. But importantly, what this contract did was also give us the freedom beyond the sourcing commitments that we made for plants here in the U.S. to get products from other parts of the world to be able to sell in the U.S. from some other parts of the world, lower cost. And that's just business. So we're very proud of the fact in the last contract, in 2011, we invested over $10 billion in the United States of America, and we created 25,000 jobs. And in this new contract, we agreed to invest $9 billion and create or secure 8,500 jobs. We want to make sure we do our part to contribute to economic development here in the States, pay our workers fairly, but also keep an eye on that competitiveness. And where we see that we have to go outside or go to lower cost areas to bring some product in, we will do that.
The next question has to do with electric cars. Some industry observers believe that electric car sales have not been up to expectation. Do you think that's because of lower gasoline prices in the United States, or are dealers somewhat reluctant to give up the service profits that come with gasoline car sales?
Well, I think the main reason, let's put it into perspective, about 4 years ago, there were 12 electrified offerings in the marketplace. Electrified we define as conventional hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and full battery electric vehicles. And it represented about 2.5% of the total industry. Fast forward today, there's almost 60 offerings in the marketplace. Guess what percent of the industry it represents? 2.5%. Now, the elements are gas prices, right? Listen, you look at the prices down here, $2.20, $2.30 a gallon. Believe it or not, in Detroit, I went by a station yesterday, $1.59 a gallon. It's the lowest in the country. So when customers are looking at the increased cost to buy an electrified vehicle, they're sitting at their kitchen tables, they're doing the math, and they're saying the payback is 29.5 years. That doesn't make sense. So I think there's a portion of that, plus there's also a portion of just the adoption of that technology, what's called range anxiety, right? What if I'm going out and I run out of juice? It's not like there's a gas station, which you have a gas station in every corner. So as a company, we're viewing electrification as an opportunity. Yes, we have to work in getting the cost down, but we have to work with the federal government to make sure we have reasonable regulations going forward that take into account costs, that take into account impact on jobs, et cetera. But also at the same time, we want to do our part as a company to foster environmental improvement and make our vehicles as easy on the environment as possible. And that's why we have the biggest offering of electrified vehicles, and we're number two in the marketplace after Toyota with their Prius line.
I've got another question on industry sales. We may be headed towards a record year in the industry in the United States. Interestingly, if you look at it between cars and trucks, cars are down somewhat and trucks are up. Trucks, and I include SUVs in that category. That presumably reflects lower gas prices. Do you think that trend will continue, and will it handicap your ability to meet fuel economy standards?
Well, first off, I do think beyond, clearly lower gas prices are influencing people to buy bigger vehicles. But also at the same time, we found even before gas prices came down, people were migrating towards SUVs, small and medium-sized SUVs, because it had more functionality, more room, more capability. And now the lower gas prices are actually accelerating it. In terms of meeting the fuel economy requirements, the new fuel economy requirements are to be 54.5 miles per gallon across our fleet by the year 2025. Is it going to be more of a challenge? Yes, but we have to work on that.
Good. Well, I just got the nod. I think we're out of time, and I want to thank you again.
Hold it. Mark. Hold. I want this last question.
Should I
buy, sell, or hold my Ford stock?
What?
Okay.
That's not an all-nighter, I'll tell you that. I can even guess the answer to that, baby.
So here's a great story. We had record third quarter earnings, and we're talking to the analysts, and one analyst said, congratulations on a, because they're worried about our year at the peak. And they said, congratulations on a record earnings. That's great. time to sell. I don't agree with that, but.
That's good. Thanks a million. I appreciate it. Very good.